Good evening. I'd encourage you to pull out your Bibles and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 4. 1 Samuel chapter 4, that will serve as our text together this evening. We'll get to that in just a moment. It's hard to believe that tonight is our last night together. It seems we do this too where I'm at, that most places have gone to a Sunday through Wednesday format. And while selfishly that does well for me to get back home in time and prepare for what I have to do this next weekend, I appreciate that, and I know that also there are other reasons. It seems to be better attended and certain things like that. It seems like our time just doesn't last long enough. It's interesting, my son and I were going back to the elders' house last night, and he said, "Dad, can we just stay two more weeks?" I don't know if that's because Deidre spoiled him so much, or he just likes being out of school, or likes being around his cousins, Caleb and Jacob's back tonight. But it certainly has been enjoyable for us to be here. It's been enjoyable for me to be back with my family here, with Glenn and Deidre specifically. We've not been able to spend as much time together in recent years, and I've had such a good time over several pots of coffee the last couple of days, and have really enjoyed being with them. And it's so good to see my cousin Glenn serving here as an elder. I've known each other all our life, at least my life, and I've looked up to him in so many ways in the past, and certainly look up to him for his faith and for his leadership. And I know he's an asset here. And love Deidre and all of her kids, and just always have such a good time with them. I like to pick on Jacob and Caleb a lot, and I think that's because when I was a child, their dad abused me pretty well, and it's just their turn. And but they're good kids. Good kids. And we're going to miss him when we leave tomorrow. And it's been good to be with my friend Edwin. I mentioned the other night, and I pick on him a lot, and I think you've appreciated that probably, but God brought us together. There's no doubt about that. He and I are just really good friends, and he means so much to me. There is no doubt in the world outside of my wife and family that he is probably the person I am closest to, and I'm sure Marita gets tired of hearing about our conversations. I know my wife does. We talk maybe once a day, sometimes a couple times a day. And he is the iron that sharpens me as iron, and I'm so grateful for him. And I know you're blessed. I know you lift his hands up. And I hope he has many, 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 many good years here with you guys, and that you can do great things in this community. I hope that maybe I'll be able to come back and I'll be able to see that you've grown so much. You've had to knock walls down and build on, and I know that that's something you want as well. And I'm just so proud of my buddy Edwin and the good work he does for the Lord. And I appreciate you taking care of him in that way. And to the elders here, thank you for inviting me. Had a great time. I hope that you have benefited from me as much as I've benefited from you. And I hope that we'll be able to see each other again sometime. If you're ever in the Memphis, Tennessee area, feel free to stop on by and to see us. We'd love to have you. We'll show you where all the good barbecue restaurants are. There's a lot of them. And we certainly like to see you. If we don't see each other again here, we'll certainly plan on meeting on the other day, other side of the Day of Judgment, where we can spend eternity together. Certainly look forward to that. We always learn from the history of Israel. In fact, Paul tells us in Romans 15, that's why that history was recorded for us. There are some people who have said to me before, why do we spend so much time studying the Old Testament? Why do you ever preach out of the Old Testament? Well, because Paul said it's there for our learning. There's a lot to learn. And the story of 1 Samuel 4 is a great place to learn as well. One of the big mistakes that I believe Israel made in their existence as a country is they put their faith in the wrong things. And in 1 Samuel 4, what we see is one of those situations where they have put their faith in a box. Now, it's not often that we refer to the Ark of the Covenant as a box. But the reality is, that's all that it is. It's a very ornate box. In fact, as a child, I used to struggle with, why is it that Noah's Ark and the Ark of the Covenant, the pictures didn't look anything alike? Because Noah's Ark looks like this boat, and the Ark of the Covenant is a box with some poles on it and two winged creatures on top of it. And the reality is that the reason for that is that Noah's Ark probably didn't look like a boat. Looked like a big wooden box that floated. Because an ark is just another word for a box. And in Exodus 25, the Lord commanded the people of Israel to make a box to carry some important, significant items for these people. The Ten Commandments represented God's promises. The manna was there to remind them of God's providence. And a budding rod of Aaron showed them God's power. And every year, the high priest would then enter into the most high place, most holy place, and sprinkle blood on this box because it represented the seat of God and the presence of God. And he'd make atonement for the people with God through the manifestation of this box in this room. When we get to 1 Samuel 4, we see that throughout history, Israel had often separated themselves from God. They had followed what we often call the cycle of apostasy, where they would serve God for a while and then leave and then be carried away into some form of service to someone else until they cried out for supplication and here comes God's salvation and they serve again. And over again they went through this cycle. But in 1 Samuel 4, we see the story of them putting their faith in a box. Israelites had entered a battle with the Philistines. And what happens in this battle is they lose 4,000 men in one day. For Israel, that is a resounding defeat. In fact, I would recall to your mind that the Battle of Ai, which got them so upset, they lost 32 men. So in this story, 4,000 men fall in one day. And so they gather and they say, what's the problem? We need to rethink our strategy. And so start reading in verse 2 to see 1 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 2. The Philistines drew up in line against Israel and the battle spread. Israel was defeated by the Philistines who killed about 4,000 men on the battlefield. And when the troops came to the camp, the elders of Israel said, why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord here from Shiloh, that it may come among us and save us from the power of our enemies. So the people sent to Shiloh and brought from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, who is enthroned on the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. As soon as the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into camp, all Israel gave a mighty shout so that the earth resounded. Did you notice that as they ask what's wrong here, what do we need to do, what their answer is? Their answer was not, you know what we need to do? We need to call for Eli the priest and we need to make intercession before God to find out if we should be fighting this battle to begin with. Or maybe what we should do is to pray to God and ask for His help and to ask Him to deliver us. No, what they thought of is, I know what the problem is. We don't have the ark with us. And so much faith did they place into that box that as it enters the camp, they rejoice so loudly that the earth shakes from their joy. The problem in this story is not that Israel had been forgotten by God, but Israel had forgotten God themselves. And you know what happens as they go to battle the next day? The next day, 30,000 men fall in battle. And Hophni and Phinehas are killed in battle. And the ark is captured and taken back by the Philistines. Isn't it fitting that God allowed the ark to be captured? Because it was the ark they believed in more than even him. And in the story, Israel is forced to see what they had done as they watched the ark be carried away. Tonight, as we think about faith outside the box, and we use this story as kind of a springboard for us, let me ask you the question, is our faith in a box? Not that we are guilty of having some Ark of the Covenant. But I do think that if we're not careful, we can restrict our faith to a box. And I tell you what the box is. The box is the building. Maybe you've never thought of a church building this way, but as ornate as you make it, it's still just a big box. I mean, this room essentially has four sides to it. Oh, there's other compartments, but if you were to go outside, it looks like a big box, does it? A series of boxes put together. And I wonder sometimes if we don't put our faith in our building and what goes on at our building. Consider how our speech betrays us in this way. Somebody might say, well, where do you go to church? And you might say, well, I go to the Brownsburg Church. Where is that at? Oh, it's over on Hornaday Road. Is that where the church is at? Or is that where the building's at? Or maybe somebody says, hey, you know what? I'll meet you at church. And they mean the location. How often is it that we use this idea of this building as a substitute, if you will, for the church itself, when the church is really just the assembly of God's people? I understand that our religion should not be confined to this building, and I understand that many will go, we don't do that. I mean, we may say those words, but we don't confine. I mean, we live like Christians outside of the building. But I want you to stick with me for a little bit, and I want you to think about how we may keep our faith just restricted in the church building. Because one of the examples I think of that is, some people, some Christians, just see attendance as the fulfillment of their duty. I mean, after all, sometimes it's, hey, look, I'm a good guy. I go three times a week. Why not talk to some of those people who don't show up on Sunday night? Start with them. I'm one of the core. You know, the reality is that God expects a lot more of us than just going to the box three times a week. I know Hebrews 10:24-25, let us consider how to stir up one another in love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. I know what it says. I know it says we need to encourage and be assembling, and we need to do that, but we make a crucial mistake if we think that is the definition of our faith, of whether or not we are faithful. And so much so do we think of it in that way that sometimes we might ask the question, is so-and-so faithful? Oh yeah, he's here all the time. I mean, think about how that correlation works. Now the reality is that every congregation, I think, has its core. Its core members who do most of the work. But sometimes even then we limit that to the work at the building. We talk about work, we're talking about teaching classes at the building. We talk about evangelism, we're talking about getting people to come to the building. We talk about all these things, and sometimes it's just about the box. And I think we see this trend in the religious world today, in other groups. You know, when it comes to hospitality, that is almost in some places non-existent in homes among other religious groups because of what? Because it's always happening at the building. Hospitality, the idea of getting together, the idea of eating together, it's happening at the box in a lot of places. individual groups that might need to get together and spend time and encourage one another. Instead of that happening outside of the church building, it's happening at the building through all the ministries, whether it's single care or divorce care or widow care or young groups or youth ministries, all of the things that happen, it's always at the box. Now I want you to think for a moment about the book of Acts. And I want you to think about just what they did. In Acts 2, 3,000 souls were added to the church. You know what they didn't have in Acts 2? A building. They met in a public place, but it wasn't their own building. And in Acts 2 it says that they ate together consistently, house to house. They met daily to study. They prayed together. And all of that was done without what? Without any evidence of them ever having a building of their own. In Acts 6, there's benevolent aid being given to those in need. Guess what it doesn't appear they had in Acts 6? A building. All of the work that went on in Acts, all of the conversions, in fact, I would challenge you to think through, maybe even study through the conversions. Find one conversion in the book of Acts that even occurred inside of the context of an assembly. Acts 2, maybe, which wasn't really the assembly of the church necessarily. Some might argue that Lydia, but outside of that, how many of those conversions happen by somebody coming forward during the invitation song while we all stand and sing? What am I really saying? Am I saying what we need to do is sell up the building and divide up in numerous little groups and meet in smaller congregations and homes and get rid of the building because that's the problem? No, not at all. What I'm saying is that sometimes what we need to do is we need to get back to getting our faith outside of the church building. And even if we change the building to smaller buildings, we're still putting it in the same box. The location. There are some, and if you saw this title, some people get nervous with the phrase outside of the box or out of the box. Because I tell you, there's a group of people that use that phraseology to challenge us to change everything. Let's get outside of the box. We've just been too stagnant and bored for too long. We need to change everything. We don't need this ritualistic traditional worship. Let's just redo everything. You know what's funny about that is those people who talk about getting outside of the box, at least in our application, they're still inside the box. All they're doing is changing what happens in the building. And the reality is you can keep changing all of those things and until you actually let your faith get beyond your assembly, you're still going to run into the same problems. Because when you confine what is holy in your life to a geographic location or a meeting time, and that's what contains the work and the Word of God in your life, there's nothing fulfilling about that. We need to move outside of the box. Matthew chapter 5, I encourage you to turn over there and remind yourself of the description of us in Matthew chapter 5 and the Sermon on the Mount in verses 14 through 16. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven. You know, I'm afraid in some ways the church building today has become that basket that is being put over the light. That sometimes the only time we really let our light shine is we're inside the church building. The only people that see that light then is who? The other lights. Romans 12, a passage we read earlier this week. I appeal to you therefore, brothers, by the mercy of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good, acceptable, and perfect. I tell you what, if you do that, if you live that way, that's going to happen not only inside of the church building, the box, but outside of it. You might say, well, that sounds great. Fantastic. How do we do that? What are we supposed to do then? Let me give you just a few ways we can get outside the box. And these are just three things that I think sometimes we put all of our focus here inside the church building. And the first of those I have to tell you is when it comes to our families, I'm afraid too often that we are containing our family and religion and faith inside the church building. It is sad to me that there are some families that the only time their children hear about God or witness spiritual discussions is right here. There are many families that the only time they see their parents open their Bibles are here in the church building. The only time they see their family interact with other Christians, at the church building, at the box. Now, I want you to think in contrast to secular education. We send our kids to school. Or maybe you homeschool your kids. Regardless of which option you have chosen for your child, you ensure that your child has a good education. And every day, you check your child's work. Our kids come home from school, we have a folder. We take out the take-home folder, we look at all of the different things, and we make sure that there's the right things done and checked off and the homework's done. We check the agenda planner. If they're struggling, what do? We go hire a tutor for them. If your child doesn't do math good and you're not good at math, you go find somebody to tutor them in math. You may pay them money to tutor that. Some families even purchase tools, maybe DVDs or computer programs. We do everything it takes to give our child a good secular education. Because we know if you don't have a good education, what's going to happen? You're not going to be successful in life. Think about for a moment how we treat sports and recreation. My kids all play sports. I've encouraged that greatly. My son plays football and soccer, and he's played baseball and basketball. My daughter plays softball and soccer. We encourage them to find a sport they like. We take them to all the practices. We sit down and we watch the games on TV so they can learn. My son's an offensive lineman. We don't watch the ball carrier sometimes. I go, look at that. Did you see that? Did you see what that lineman did? Look where his hands are. I know that sounds sick to some of y'all. My son has grabbed the remote and backed it up and said, "Watch this, Dad." We purchase training devices. My son has a tackle dummy in the garage. One of the greatest moments of my life this year is I came home and he's in the front yard tackling that thing all by himself. We get all of this stuff to make sure they're going to be successful. If they're in baseball, we get a hitting, some kind of hitting instructor device. We throw with them. We make them more accurate. We make them run faster. We work on speed and agility. We do everything we can. If they're struggling, we go to the coach. What do I need to do? What is the problem? If you drive by my house, you're going to see me playing a lot of times with my kids in the front yard, practicing on stuff. And we do all of this work. Why? So they can be good in a sport. Now, here's the question. At the end of the day, how important really is that secular education or that sport that I spend so much time on? Is my son's life going to end because he doesn't get a law degree from Harvard or Vanderbilt? No. That will not be his demise or his doom. Is his life going to end when he doesn't get drafted to play in the NFL? Notice I didn't say if, I said when. That way we won't be disappointed. No, his life's not going to be over. If my child doesn't succeed as the best student or the best athlete, is it going to destroy him? No, in fact, I will tell you, I know none of my kids are the best at anything they do. As good as they are, there's always going to be somebody else out there who's better. It's a reality of life. My buddy Edwin over here, he has a phrase maybe you've heard before. There's only one Jesus. Your kid ain't him. And that's important to remember sometimes. But in contrast, let me ask you this question. How important is it that my child understands how to walk with God and serve Him faithfully all the days of his life? If he does not succeed at that, it will destroy him. know, it's amazing as I spend all this time and effort on all these other things that do not matter. And some days, I'm too tired or inconvenienced or frustrated to sit down and teach my children. Ephesians 6 and verse 4 tells fathers to bring their children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That is not a command for you to bring your children to the church building. It is a command for you to sit down and teach them. I'm reminded of the words of Deuteronomy chapter 6. In verses 6 through 9, there as Moses told Israel how to raise their children. He said, "These words I command to you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children. And shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Moses is saying, you teach them about God every minute in every way that you possibly can. Do we do that? Do we show them how to live and serve God? It is my responsibility to do that for my children outside of the box. Here in Deuteronomy 6, he didn't say, you shall bind them on the gateposts of the tabernacle. He said, you should put them on your doorposts and on the gates of your house and on your hands and on your foreheads. You talk to your child about spiritual things. I once knew a family who the parents would get up on Sunday morning and drive their kids to church for class to the building and then go back home until the assembly started. I got to tell you, that is not teaching your children. And I would tell you that what we're talking about is not just teaching, it is also example. They need to witness Christ living in us. They need to see that it's more than just words and it's more than just a book we throw in the back seat of the car until Wednesday night. That Jesus Christ directs our life. He is Lord of our life. He rules us. They need to understand when we make decisions as a family that it is God that is leading those decisions. We make important decisions based on how it affects us spiritually. Here's where I step on some toes. We got a rule in our house. We don't miss assemblies for secular things. You can ask my son. There have been times where he has come straight from practice. He's left early. He is in dirty football pants and cleats. We don't miss Bible classes or assemblies for practice or for games or for anything else. We don't do that. You know why? Not because I have to get them to the box, but I have to show them that faith exists even outside of that. That's one way we try to teach that. Our children won't go to a college where there's not a church. It's not going to happen. It's not worth risking their faith to get that education. Because in the end, no matter how good that education is, they lose their soul, they have lost all there is. We need to get our faith outside the box when it comes to our family. We need to get outside the box when it comes to our work. Sometimes people tell me they're okay because they go to church. They're faithful. There's a real danger in believing that just because we believe in the Bible, we believe in Jesus, we go to church, and we can recite all of the tiny stories of the Old Testament, there's a real danger in believing that is faith and that is all it takes. I tell you what that does. That makes a nice little package for us. It's easy to say, oh yeah, I'm a Christian and I'm faithful. Here's my package. I go to church. I know the stories. I can recite them to you. I've got a Bible. I believe in Jesus. But I got to tell you, faith is more than just that. All week long, we've been looking at James 2. I encourage you to turn over there again. In fact, today, Edwin and I were in his office, and I said, you know what? I said, it seems like every lesson I've turned to James 2 this week. He said, well, yeah, just one of the most important passages on faith. That's how he said it too, because you know how Edwin talks. And I responded, it's also one of the most neglected passages of faith. The reason for that is the only time we ever find James 2 is when we're arguing with somebody about faith. And that it's not faith only. I got to tell you, again, as we said, this passage is about faith. It's describing it. But I want you to specifically look at verses 15 and 17. Three of my favorite verses in this text. If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm and filled without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Here's the real essence of faith. Somebody says, you know what? I'm hungry. Go be filled. What good does that do? What good would it do? You know what? I believe in God and He'll take care of those who love Him. You keep on loving Him and God's going to feed you. So true faith does what? True faith feeds that person. Clothes that person. Helps that person. And I think sometimes that's one of the areas where sometimes our faith just doesn't act out like it should. God will provide, but so often He provides through us. We are the providential hand that our faith, when it is working, is what meets the needs of others. We are told in places like Ephesians 4, let him who stole steal no longer, nevertheless let him work. Why? So he may give to those who are in need. It's our job. That's true working faith. Somebody might say to me, well, you know, we have a treasury for that. There's the box mentality again. That's the church's responsibility. No, it's our responsibility, isn't it? Let us do good unto all men, especially those of the household of faith, over in Galatians 6. I tell you what, when you move your faith outside of the box, you are constantly looking for ways to work. To lift up, to strengthen, to support one another, to encourage one another. More than just assembling, it's more than just professing faith, it's more than singing loudly or saying amen in the assemblies. Faith is seen in our everyday life. And so much so that our actions that exemplify faith, the kind of things that James said, I will show you my faith by my works. Those are the things that cause other people to look at us and go, I don't know what it is about that guy, but I want to be like him. Now, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but that's exactly what happened in the book of Acts. Two men are in a jail. An earthquake could free them. But they stay. And the jailer doesn't know what it is about those guys, but he wants to be like them. A centurion who lived the heathen life because of his station in the Judean territory sees the relationship between the Jews and their God. And he doesn't know what it is, but he wants it. So much so that Cornelius began to pray like a Jew and give alms like a Jew. Until one day, God sends somebody to teach him what it really needs to happen for him to become in a relationship with God. A lame man is healed. But that's not enough because he sees that the ones who healed him acted differently. And even when they're attacked, they don't respond in kind, but they respond with humility and faithfulness to their God. And this lame man doesn't understand all about it, but he knows he wants to be like Peter. Over and over again, these stories happen in Acts because men and women who were Christians walked like Christians and acted like Christians outside of their assemblies. And they helped one another. They did good things. They lived by faith. I wonder sometimes if we're like that. Before I was a preacher and I was in college, I welded for a while. I worked at one of these factories and was replacing a lot of things and welding. And there was an engineer we worked with all the time. And this engineer, he kind of used some language that I was used to hearing but not using myself. And one day he's sitting there and he's saying some things. And I said, well, I've got to go. I've got to be at church tonight. He goes, well, where do you go to church? And I told him, I said, I go over here to the Church of Christ. And he says, well, I go over here to this Church of Christ too. Can I tell you, I never would have known that. He certainly didn't act like anybody who had any faith. I mean, when he was on the job site, he sounded like everybody else. But you know what? There was times that I did the same thing. Because after all, I went to church. Got to get our faith and our work outside of the box. Let people see who we are. What we should be away from just this room. What about in our focus as a whole? Children of Israel thought that as long as they had the ark, they had God on their side. After all, throughout the Old Testament, the ark signified God's presence. I mean, it is the ark that when it sets foot in the Jordan River, what happens? The water spread. The ark showed the significance of God so often. It was the ark that went around Jericho with Israel. They knew God was with them because of that. Until Philistines captured the ark and they were forced to realize he wasn't there any longer. I'm afraid sometimes that because we come to this building that has the right sign and we do the right things and we don't do the things we shouldn't do, I think because we do that sometimes we believe we are right. Can I tell you, that is not what makes us right. The sign and checking off all of the list of the do's and don'ts. What makes us right is being right with God and walking righteously. And when we do that, all that stuff is done. But it's a different motivation. It's the focus of what is really important. If you don't get anything else out of this lesson or even this week, please understand this. We are only God's people when we act like God's people. That's the reality. When it comes down to faith and questioning whether or not we are walking by faith, it comes down to the same problem Israel had. We are only God's people when we walk and we talk and we act like God's people. We can profess to be the chosen ones all we want, but if we are serving flesh and self, we are not His. We're not walking by faith. Let me give you another area of focus where I think we look at the building. That's the area of evangelism. Now, before I use this example, let me say that we are very active where I'm at in those who come to the building trying to evangelize them. I am not negating that example at all. But I realize we have a responsibility to teach the gospel, but sometimes when it comes to evangelism, the only way we strive to do that is by trying to get them to the church building. And while I think that is one method, there are many other methods that can be used. Sometimes there are people who won't come to the building, but will study in other ways. There are some stories of some conversions where the first time anybody set foot in a building was to put on Christ through baptism after a study. Do you ever think back to the book of Acts? I mentioned earlier, but think about these conversions. Saul is converted because of a one-on-one study with Ananias. Oh, I know. I know about Jesus appearing on the road, but it took Ananias coming and teaching him, didn't it? That's what taught him the truth. Peter taught Cornelius at home. The eunuch was taught in a chariot. The jailer was converted at home. Evangelism was done so often in one-on-one, sit-down studies in ways that never involved a building or an assembly at all. Can it be done in that? Absolutely. Is it the only way we can do it? No. I will tell you, I'm afraid one of the reasons we focus on it so much is it is the easiest way to do it. Because if we can just invite, even if they turn us down, at least we're trying and doing something. I tell you, when we get our faith outside of the building, and we can achieve the purpose of teaching others in any setting, in any place, realize there are other ways to do it, we will be more successful. I know you just started your dial a Bible moment. Is that how it's said? Close enough. Dial a Bible study. I applaud that. You're looking for ways to reach souls without them having to come here. And I pray that that works well. I think that's a great idea. Get our faith outside of the box. Put it into action and work away from here. And I tell you, if you do that, everything inside the box seems to take care of itself, doesn't it? If you're working and active in your faith away from here, everything here seems to work. In fact, I got to tell you, if we could get more Christians to get their faith right outside of the box, they wouldn't have as hard a time showing up at the box. There are a lot of people today who are looking for something new and exciting. And let me just say about that. I mentioned earlier, they like to use this phrase, outside of the box. They want a new adventure. They want to break the boredom and stagnation of what they view church to be. They're tired of the same old songs and the same order of the songs and the traditions that go along with that. And they scream, we've got to get outside the box. So what they do is they go and they change the songs and they may clap with the songs. Some are even considering adding instruments to the songs. They alter the style of teaching. They use just more visual aids and different kinds of options to make it more enjoyable. They alter their preaching. They break it up into smaller sections. They don't want any monotony. They shake things up. No two services are ever alike. But after a while, can I tell you, that's not going to change anything. Because all they've done is they still just focused on assembly. Religion's still trapped inside of a box. I tell you what is new and exciting as a child of God is when you practice Christianity outside of the church building. And you talk to people. Oh, sometimes that means you're going to get some interesting responses. But that's exciting. And sometimes you're going to find opportunities to teach people and to help people and to bring Christ to somebody who really needs to know Christ. And you want to live the life more abundantly serving God? Make sure that your life of faith is more than just what goes on right here. Because if all this is for you, is what happens in this room. That doesn't satisfy God or your own soul. Don't be like Israel, who put their faith in a box. I challenge you to look for ways this week and in the weeks to come to get outside of that and to extend what you believe and what you practice as a child of God outside of these walls. Let people know who you are, what you are, and who you serve. That's what God expects of us. I leave you with that challenge this week and pray that you are successful. As we close, let me extend the invitation one more time. It's possible there are some here who've never obeyed the gospel. Who've never put into obedience the things you've read in Scripture. Who've never put into obedience the things you know from Scripture. You may believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and yet your faith and belief has just stopped there at that. Tonight's a night that you can actually obey based on that belief. Aren't you willing to repent of your lifestyle of serving self and start walking with God? Would you confess tonight that Jesus is indeed the Son of God? And would you be baptized, washing away your sins, rising up a new creature, walking in newness of life? We'd encourage you to do that tonight. If you've not done it, won't you put on Christ? Won't you be obedient to the gospel? Won't you come now while we stand and while we sing?